Hey everybody, welcome back to a very special edition of Rob Has a Podcast. We have another one of our series of Black Voices of Survivor Roundtables that Sean Rector, who put together the first one that we did a couple of weeks ago, we got back together and we want to get together with some new voices, some of our voices from last time.
Hey everybody, welcome back to a
very to have everybody back with us here tonight. Sean, how are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks again for allowing us to use your platform to get our voices heard. The first one seemed like it was a success. There was a lot of good feedback. And, you know, my goal at some point is to get every Black survivor on here, not to be exclusive, but I want to make sure we get everybody, you know, first, whose voices have been either diminished or just unheard, and then blend our collective voices in with everyone else's so that, you know, at some point when the game becomes equitable, we can kind of just have one big happy family and we don't have to kind of separate it along race lines and class lines. But for right now, because of where we are in our country and where we are in society, I just think the time is now for our voices to be heard.
And thanks for bringing everybody together, Sean, that I think that so many of the people in the audience really want to hear from all of the Black Survivor players that we've gotten to know on our TVs, between everything that's gone on that you've experienced in the game to everything that's happening in the real world right now. Like, this is the perfect time to have this type of conversation.
Yeah, no doubt. So I want to jump right into it because we have some of my favorite players on here, some of my favorite people. So without further ado, let's jump right on in here. We definitely want to welcome all of you. Thank you for taking the time to do this. We obviously, there's so much to talk about, but I think we first want to start by introducing ourselves. And I do want to start with some of the newer people that this is their first time on here, so the audience can get to know them and a little bit about their background. So Joanna Ward, let us know who you are, what's your name, what season, and a little bit about your season, either on or after, and welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me, Sean. And Rob was on the Amazon, so I was on season 6, the Amazon. Joanna Ward from Atlanta, Georgia. South Carolina State University Bulldog. I was the only African-American on my show, and my show was comprised of Men Against the Women. And I think that Rob and his teammates were afraid of me, so I heard. They didn't want anything to do with me, so they voted me off. I did find Pineapple, and I feel very good about how I played the game because I was known as the Hallelujah Lady. It was kind of a bit of a challenge for people in the game, but as for me personally, it worked out. I'm now the host of On the Move with Joanna Ward. We're in our 208th episode of that. It's on television. It's syndicated in 7 markets. So if you want to know more about it, just Google it. And thanks for inviting me. And other than that, that's me.
Hallelujah.
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 Beat Rob and the other men many times while I was in the game.
Hallelujah again. Hallelujah.
Play with God if you want to, Sean. He'll come see you tonight.
Oh, I know. I actually ain't playing, but that was for a dig at Rob. Thanks, sis. Appreciate it. Cassandra, introduce the world to you and your story, sis.
Sure. Hi, my name is Cassandra Franklin. I was on season 14, Survivor Fiji, and we were the only survivor that there was 3 African-American finalists. I currently reside in Los Angeles, California, and I'm the CAO for the Computer Science Department at UCLA. And without my partner in crime's dreams, I would not have made it through that season of extreme racism. And even at the finale, we couldn't enjoy our final moments as the final 3. CBS made sure that there was 5 people at every red carpet event. I guess to put a little color other than the color in there. Mm. So that's a little bit about me.
Okay. Thank you. Jeremy Crawford, welcome, brother. And tell us a little bit about your story.
Hey, I'm Jeremy Crawford. I live in Miami and New York. I was on season 37, David versus Goliath. And at least in my opinion and many others, it was one of the best of the newest seasons. It's been on Survivor. It was a very interesting season. It was a huge diverse cast. I think it was four African-Americans, one or two Asians, Puerto Rican, three gays. So some of that I also think is because it was Lynn's, one of her last seasons. So instead of spreading everybody out, she put everybody in one season, which made the show very realistic because it was so many different. It was the melting pot of America. It was, you never really have three openly gay people, or you never have four black people unless it is a race-based season like Cook Island. We had Latinos, we had Spanish. It was just really, really rich. And if you look at the reviews for season 37, you see that richness paid off. And if anything that CBS can take from what's going on now is that diversity pays. And so I had a unique experience that everybody who watched that season will remember. It was me and Natalie having some very personal conversations that you really don't get to see on TV. What African-Americans talk about once we are really amongst ourselves, and we almost made a closed behind door conversation public. And so it was a very unique experience that I'm very proud to be a part of, because regardless of how you viewed it, it was authentic. And so that's my story.
Oh, Sean, you're on mute.
Sorry about that. Let's go to our other brother, the other Jeremy Collins. One of the few African winners in this whole game. So let's give this brother a hand. Give it up, man. Come on, that's no easy feat in this joint. So our brother Jeremy, go ahead, man. Let us know.
Hey, what's up, y'all? It's good to see you guys. Of course, my man Rob. You know, me and Rob are friends. You know, I see Rob. I see Russ. It's good to see you guys. Specialist is out here. I see you. So I'm Jeremy. I played three times, season 29, season 31, and season 40. I won season 31. So my thing is, my first season, I come out, there was some minorities. My wife was with me. We had Nat and Nadia. I had a bond with Nat and Nadia, or I should say my wife and I had a bond with Nat and Nadia, that was a storyline for us. You know, Nadia was out first, Val went out second, and then I kind of rode with Nat for a while, and then they took me out, and Nat kind of rode the whole way by herself. She kind of finished it off. My second season, I felt like I had another sister with me. I had Tasha with me, and we rode all the way to the end, and I pulled it off. And my third season, it was funny. Like, I think they saw that, I don't know if it was me or if it was me with minorities. I don't know what it was, but anytime a minority was with me, they were taking that minority out. So Nat right away was gone. And then at the merge, Wenda was gone. And I mean, I could have played better and I could have kept some of my people around, you know, longer to help my game out. But I don't know, man. My Survivor experience is great. I love it. I wouldn't change it for the world, but you know, there's hurdles we have to go through, you know, being minorities out there. So I don't know.
Yo, Jeremy, real quick. First of all, thank you for speaking your piece, because I think maybe there's a misconception that if you win, that you should just keep your mouth shut and be quiet, because after all, you won. What's the problem? Right. But I think there's no right or wrong. This is just everyone has the right to talk about their journey wherever they landed. And I it's an honor to see you, brother. This is my first time and our first time, because we've connected technologically, you know, since the beginning. Yeah. And I feel like we've been connected spiritually and just otherwise. And I feel like you and Val, y'all like the Obamas of this whole thing. Like, y'all like Survivor royalty. So, you know, it is dope that as husband and wife, and then to see your beautiful family come on Winners of War, seeing you as a father. You represent it really well, brother. And I'm proud of you and your family. And just want to say I love you, man.
Hey, I love you, dog. Thank you. That means a lot. I appreciate that.
Real talk. All right, let's go. Let me see. Let me make sure. My man, Dreams. We need some light. So our brother Dreams is on here. Yes, brother. Let the world know who you are. Myself, Russ, and Dreams. I think we were roommates or something crazy back in the day in one of them functions. So Dreams, tell the world who you are, man.
I am Dre Dreams Hurd.
Put on that car light, brother.
Weirdly enough, my car don't have a car light.
Oh, right.
It's bad over here, man.
It's definitely a black show.
It's blue, and I ain't get it fixed. So
that's all right.
That's where we at right now. So
that's all right.
Let me get my son to drive a little bit and some light or some junk.
I love it. We are officially a black show. It has started, ladies and gentlemen, but I love it. This is the only way it'll go down right here. But there you go. That's better, Dreams. We got it.
Yeah, we're at the red light.
Okay.
Y'all missed it a little earlier when we first got on, man. We got pulled over by the cops, you know.
Black.
My son driving, so I was like, man, whatever, man. Like, I'm saying we all legal here, so. But he wanted to tell us that one of our brake lights was out and whatnot, so I got to get that fixed. I can't let that ride like that.
So only Dreams can start his intro with a story with the cops and his light not working. Dreams, tell us where you at, what state, where you live at, what season you was on, and anything particular. Cassandra is always bigging you up as her success. You know, you guys, there's a connection with you guys, probably like Vesepia and I. So just tell us a little bit about your experience, you know, on the show and you know, things of this nature.
Well, here's the thing, too. If it wasn't for Cassandra, I would have left. There was no need for me to be there without Cassandra. You know, I told him, I said, listen, if y'all gonna vote her out, I'm leaving. Because I tried to get them to, if I thought it was a, you know, I'm a guy who studies, okay? I look at something, I go back and study it. For a matter of fact, that's what I do right now for a living. Pull over right here, brother. In the light, man.
I know this.
So before I got to the show, I went and I studied the rest of the show in the light, man.
I ain't even want to be weird next to y'all. That's the only reason.
So I went and studied the seasons to come, right? And I learned a couple of things. I learned that, first of all, I learned that as a survivor, as a black man, things you can and cannot do, you know, and on the show. Now this not, I'm not offended by my learnings because, you know, in where we live at in America, I'm used to it. You can't be a black guy who also is smart. You can't do that. It's just something you can't do, you know. So I base my game on just acting like I don't know what's going on. Same with Earl. Earl did the same thing. It's funny enough. And I realized that you can't be a leader because if you are a leader, they're going to say, oh, he's a threat. So I wasn't being a leader. And I knew that a black dude couldn't be a leader. But when I got to the show, Earl was actually a leader. You know, they didn't show it. They didn't put it up. They didn't edit him as a leader. They edited him as, oh, he's with Yao Man. He's under Yao Man. But he carried Yao Man. You know, they didn't edit it that way. They didn't edit him as anything that he was, really, because reality, he a lot of people went through him, you know, and they tried to edit me like I was just flying by the seat of my pants, like I was an idiot. But wasn't the case at all. Now, like I said, now we signed over our life once you go and sign up for Survivor. You sign the paperwork that say that once they record, they can use that however they want. And I was okay with that. I was younger. You know, I was young. I was about 23 at the time. So watching and everything, I was kind of upset about certain things, but I had $100,000. So I was okay. But now that I'm older, I see some of that things. I see some of the stuff that they done with our editing. And you know, truthfully, as a black man, and what's going on with the world right now is people are being fed up. People are fed up with how we're being done. We're grown to deal with it, but people are now fed up. So here's the thing. They could have edited. Now, I came from nothing. I had absolutely nothing. I went to Survivor. When I went to Survivor, I had a 2-year-old kid. It was just me and him living in a house. I haven't paid rent in 3 months. I talked to the landlord, and he said I can get away with it. I told him I'll pay him on income tax time. Okay, so my kid was at home with my mom. Actually, I left him with my mom. The lights were out. We had no food. You get what I'm saying? The people on Survivor knew that. They knew that, you know? So they, instead of editing me as a determined kid who came in to get what we were playing for, they wanted to edit me like I was a hood rat who was going to do whatever it took to whoever. They made me look like I was grimy. You get what I'm saying? Instead of making it look like, hey, I'm doing what everybody else is doing. Because me reneging on a deal and Rob, you reneging on a deal are two different things. If I renege on a deal, I'm a scumbag. I'm slum. You get what I'm saying? You renege on a deal and you're genius.
They're going to say,
you
player.
Played
yeah.
the crap out of that game. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? They're going to be like, that was so smart of him. Now, people were mad because I outwitted the Harvard grads and the engineers and all of that stuff. You know, and like I said, being an older man now with my son and my kids, I have to let them know the truth. The truth is, man, you got to do what you got to do. Do the right thing. It don't matter if people think that is wrong. You get what I'm saying? As a black man, you have to do what you got to do for your family, because all people going to do is take from you.
Right.
They cool with you and they'll tolerate you if they can, if somebody's going to get something out of it. But other than that, man,
right.
I loved my Survivor experience. Don't get me wrong, but it was so much racism. It was 5 black people, but the thing was, me and Cassandra was by ourselves. You can see on the videos us sitting at one table and everybody else over there at the other table and sitting at the other table.
Hey, Dreams, let me ask you, I'm sorry to cut you off, but is this your first time being able to express all of this? Or have you? It is.
Listen.
You can feel it.
I expressed it to my girlfriend before when we watched the show together. Think of this. Every episode is 3 days. It's cut into 3 days. That's one episode is every 3 days. If it show us getting bullied for 1 hour on a show, how long do you think that actually took place? You get what I'm saying?
Hey, bro, this black. Listen, man, in the future, when you do this shit, you don't have to sit down and get your ass a drink. Because that's how you're supposed to do it. Get your ass some Hennessy, some cognac, get you something.
He actually is out in his car trying to get his gas situation. So right now, we good, man. But real quick, look, this is a good break right here because I want to make sure everybody get time. I want to get our brother Russ Swan in here. He's like, you know, sometimes you'll ask survivors have some of their favorite survivors. Fans have their favorites. But I think when you ask certain people within the Survivor family, and I just know Russ is one of those names that come up when you ask survivors who's some of their favorite survivors. He's definitely one of mine. My brother, Russ, give us your story, your intro.
Yeah, so what's up, everybody? This is Russ. Not to be confused with Mini Me or that other, the short challenge one. Yeah, I said it. I ain't worried about that, dude. Whatever. But at any rate, my name is Russ. I was on season 19 with Mini Me and a bunch of other people in Samoa. And season 25 in the Philippines, which was a disaster. But whatever. You know, brother just tried to handle his business. I'm still practicing law right now. I'm learning how to fly airplanes. I'm hoping I can get with Clarence. Maybe we can do some flying. I give some military brothers and sisters and, you know, do our flying thing. So I'm just living life. But before I switch, I just want to co-sign on something because I knew that Dreams was going to be on here. And I was remembering that when the brother did this show, he was 23, 24, And as my brother Bryce would say, I'm going to bring some receipts. So I was reading some words that were written about Brother Dre after he was voted off the show. And, you know, they do the post press and stuff. And I want you to read what this 23-year-old young brother had to deal with post-Survivor. Check this out. Dreams lost his integrity and $1 million by going back on his word to y'all, man. The only thing worse was the fact that he lied to the jury and Jeff Probst. Dreams is a pathetic loser. I feel sorry for his son. That's one person. I think either Ur or y'all, man, are deserving winners. Dreams is a pig and a loser. That is why at his age, he doesn't even have a car. He has a loser job. He'll probably end up wrecking that expensive truck. Loser, loser, loser. I wouldn't want him to be in his shoes on Judgment Day. Nothing about this game. I have no respect for him. I mean, see, so Dreams already alluded to something that when I saw his season and I read what they were saying about this brother, I was infuriated. If you are the biggest villain and you are outwit, I'll play out last, and oh my gosh, you lie. All you got to do to make sure that that is brilliant is be white. If you're anything else but that, you are a loser. I can't believe you reneged. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to lie. I mean, that's the whole premise of the show. And so I don't want to go too far into his story because this is his story. But there's been times in the continuum of this thing that I've been extremely disturbed. And that was one of those times, because then what it allows to happen is him to be pulled over by the cops and shot in the back 7 times because these brothers can't be trusted. All they do is lie. Right. And so, you know, although, you know, this is just a show and it's just for entertainment, things like that and how we get edited sometimes can be dangerous. It can actually endanger lives because, you know, if you see this person as somebody who is villainous and it's negative, this presumption of black criminality, then just like him and his son just got pulled over. I saw the lights, brother. So I did get a little worried when I saw the cops behind y'all. Right. But, you know, that's the thing that's insidious about this thing. And so what I want to say about Survivor and all of these shows, be it Big Brother, Amazing Race, all of these things, no more. You know, that ends. And if not, then we will be going to the people who support your shows with their commercials and be saying, why are you supporting the very thing they could get a Jeff Blake shot 7 times. My name is Russ Swan. I yield my time.
So hold on, Brother Russ. We can do the air claps, the snaps, because it's knowledge dropping time and truth telling. So real quick, Russ, just you read something. Where did you read? Was that an email? Was that a blog? What was that someone wrote?
It was the blog, and I took a picture of it, and I can send it to you. And of course, they didn't have two greater things to say about my sister Cassandra in that article either.
Right, right.
And the only reason why I didn't mention my sister was just because of the fact that what I was trying to show here is make that connection to black men and being endangered and that kind of thing. But so, I found it interesting that in all the things that Dre said in terms of this brother was basically coming from nothing. I mean, literally from the ashes. I mean, what a brilliant opportunity they had to tell this amazing story.
Right.
And yet everybody wanted to focus on the fact that he lied to y'all, man.
Right.
Man, forget y'all, man. I mean, he's supposed to lie to the dude because that's how you play the daggone game.
Right.
And what's really interesting, instead of rewarding him for his strategic brilliance, they basically sandbagged him and invited y'all, man, back.
So
I Russ, yield my time.
So, Russ, I want to touch on something real quick, and then we're going to open the floor. I can remember I got death threats. And, you know, when Vesepi and I did it, there was no social media. It was straight emails and people calling you direct. And some of that same stuff you read with some of the stuff that I got, and I couldn't understand it. And it sucks because we know that perception precedes reality. So how we're perceived in America for people that are not used to being around Black people and they only get their images from TV really has an effect that we see, as we see, even with cameras, people see two different things when they see a Black man and a Black woman, particularly with, as it relates to police officers. So I think what you just said and Dream narrative. Now, the irony is that Dreams was pulled over during this podcast. Like, and so even though we kind of can, you know, because we as a people sometimes can joke just to deal, just to kind of get by. But in reality, it's not funny. And the reality is nowadays a simple pullover for a tailpipe or a red light could mean death. So let me open it up. Anybody else want to jump on how their perception, either of themselves or other contestants, you think has had an effect on long-term effects with those who watch Survivor, or even your own personal experience once you went home or spoke to other survivors? Anybody want to? Decepia, let me go to you. Let me just say it. Go ahead, sis.
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and share. So as the first African-American female winner and the first African-American winner, you know, you don't expect them to give you those accolades. But when you see other people who won get those accolades, it makes you question and wonder, why is it that they are not allowing you to have that same privilege? And so even on my show, and I totally get what you're saying, Russ, especially with Dreams, is that as the winner, I strategically played a game where I kept a lot of stuff internally, and they did not know how to edit me. They were dumbfounded on how to edit my gameplay. And it may have been to the detriment of my gameplay, but that's how I wanted to play it. But in the end, I took out the person that they expected to win. And instead of them as being producers of a show, you're supposed to be good at what you do. You need to find how we make this winner look good. But they flipped it and made me look like I was under the radar. I didn't do anything to win that game, even to the point where when we were watching the shows, the episodes, people from my season would call me or email me and be like, that didn't happen like that. Why didn't they show you doing that? And I'm sitting there like, I have no idea. And I, too, I didn't get death threats, but I got a lot of nasty emails because they wanted Kathy to win. No disrespect from Kathy. She was a phenomenal player. And she played hard, but they showed her. They edited her to be very positive and to show that. And I took her out. And same with Rob. So those people that they gloated, when I continued to stay in that game, they didn't know what to do. Yeah. And it was very disappointing that as smart and as brilliant as these guys are supposed to be in the work that they do, that they chose to edit me that way. And it was unfortunate. And it had a narrative that stuck. Yeah. And that narrative has stuck to this day.
Yeah,
I mean, I've had a lot of people that was on Winners at War. First thing they said is they were looking for Vesepia. Yeah. And why in the world is she not here? Even if you didn't like the way she played,
no doubt,
as the first, why isn't she not here? Yeah. And that was the thing that was disheartening. Mm. But I always say, and I love what Joanna has that shirt on that says, trust God. I trusted God through all of this, even to this day. You know, God has been my strength through all of this. A lot of people would have been like pissed and frustrated, but I had to one day just say, you know, I got to let this stuff go. And God knows the real deal. And that's why I continue to keep a smile on my face and have a peace that passes all understanding, because He is it. So, you know, I'm always proud to come to these venues and see everybody talk and keep their head up high, knowing that, you know, we did what we did. But we have these voices and we have these opportunities to speak our piece. And so I'm just hoping and I pray that there will be another Black female winner and that they won't get the same treatment that I got.
So Vesepia, real quick, and then I'm going to pass it to you, Jolanda. I do want to say I was on there with you. The one thing I thought was interesting is that we prayed a lot. I brought my Bible. We had contestants, call us Bible thumpers. They didn't really play up the Christian or God faith part of us. It was, you know, a lot of things that you were like, okay, but we also prayed. Now, well, what happened, you know? And you know, and again, editing, you're not, I think it's unrealistic, obviously, for everyone to think they're going to get the perfect edit. It's like all these contestants, you go in like Dream said, you sign on the dotted line, you just cross your fingers and hope you ain't coming home looking crazy.
Right.
But I do want to say all of what has been going on in society has brought the spotlight on Black folks throughout the world. Like never in my lifetime have I seen the world stop. And this wasn't just because of COVID and this coronavirus. The world, when you start seeing Amish people just come out like George Floyd, you know, and just people from all over the country. Right. Just so what better time for us to come together? And I will say for the fans that don't know, many of us Black survivors have gotten together behind the scenes, more than you see on this screen. Shout out to Jamal and Jatia and Wendell. There's all these factions within our group because Black people are not monolithic, but we have all worked together for the common goal of making Survivor a better situation, not just for Black people, but for people of color and to make it more diverse. And the reason I'm leading that, I'm going to throw it to my sister, Jolanda. She spearheaded the Black Survivors Alliance with a letter that was sent out on Juneteenth, ironically. And there was a response to CBS specifically. And she led a group of us and it grew. And it was like, you know, we were all in coordinating with each other, trying to figure out what would be the best. As you see, one of my favorite books here. Malcolm and Martin, there is no one way. We always say, you know, America, listen to Martin because Malcolm's philosophy is waiting if you don't. And so the bottom line is if we can get the things that we want to achieve, I want America to know that we've been working diligently behind the scenes. And I want our sister Jolanda to speak a little bit on some of those initiatives and things that we've been pushing to get.
Oh, okay. So hi. So I'm going to just tell people in 30 seconds, like who I am. My name is Jolanda Jones. I've been a lawyer for 25 years. I'm a best-selling author, teaching people about overcoming things. I'm a former elected official for 12 years, local, citywide and statewide office. I'm a mom. I'm an Alpha Kappa Alpha, soon to be Vice President Kamala Harris is an Alpha Kappa Alpha woman as well. shout out to the D9 people on this call. That's people in Black Greek organizations. The Sepia and Ramona and Russ are D9 people. But my life has been, and I'm also the mother of a Black male who now is like 6'5", 225 with a bunch of muscles, and he's brilliant.
And hey, Joe, you're a badass too.
Well, thank you. And my son is an Omega, so he's in D9 as well. But, you know, I'm not even going to talk about really what happened to me on the show because they caricatured me and I don't feel like getting into it because the more my haters hate, the more I shake them off. Right. But I want to say this. Survivor. It's hard unless you've been on Survivor to know what they do to you. So to this day, people believe I'm the angry, bossy, whatever Black woman, because that's who we are. They say the same thing about Kamala. They probably say it about Ramona. They probably say it about V. They probably say it about Cassandra, because when we're smart and we're bright and we have opinions, we're bitches. That's what they call us, right? Mark Burnett even told me about that. That's another story for another day. But I will say when all this stuff happened, for years as survivors, we've sort of met each other. And we heard about, we all had similar experiences. So if a whole bunch of random people who don't know each other have the exact same experiences, it ain't us, it's them. And I call a spade, so I'm going to tell you, between Malcolm and Martin, I ain't Martin, I'm Malcolm, right? I am the agitator in the washing machine. Without agitation, your clothes don't get clean, right? And I own that. That's fine. I'm Angela Davis. I'm Stokely Carmichael. I'm not Martin. If you bust me in the face, I'm not praying for you. If you bust me in the face, I'm going to chop your neck off. I'm just letting you know who
you
I am.
You sound like you about to start rhyming. You need a beat.
I know you want me to do that, but I say that
go ahead.
To say this. For us, what we know about Survivor is this, and I place it on the show. Jeff Probst is a showrunner. If you guys don't know who a showrunner is, they run everything. Everything runs through him. So Jeff Probst needs to fix stuff at CBS and Survivor because he's who CBS trusts to get the show aired. So I'm going to say that because I believe in calling spades spades, right? But I will say this, when all this stuff was happening, it is my firm belief that the media gives white people and people who aren't used to Black people ideas about who we as Black people are. Because I've literally been to places where they've never seen Black people, right? Ever. And so they get their understanding of who we are by what they see on TV. And so I did not know Dre, right, before this. I did not know Russ before this. I did not know Clarence before this. I saw Jeremy. I didn't really know him. I didn't know Philip. And I did not watch Survivor because it was so painful for me to watch Survivor, because I knew if they could allow me, and I was, if you blink, you miss me. I was on for 3 days. I was the first person voted out. So if you blink, you miss me. So if they could do that to me in 3 days, I just couldn't watch. And I can tell you the most painful Survivor season that I watched, Cassandra, you'll, and Dreams, you'll have to remind me if I'm getting the right number. I think it was season 14, the season where the three Black people were in the finals. I literally didn't know that ever happened, right? Because I didn't want to watch Survivor because I would just get angry every time I saw it. But when we sent the letter on Juneteenth, and let me tell you, it took courage. We did not know when we sent that letter whether people were going to be receptive to it, whether we were going to be blackballed. So it took courage to get your name signed on that letter. There were six of us who signed that letter. And if it would have been two of us, I know for a fact, myself and Philip said, if it's just the two of us, we're going to sign that letter. Because this ain't about us, it's about history, right? But what we understood is that since Survivor is the juggernaut in reality TV, so as Survivor goes, the rest of reality TV is gonna go. And I would respectfully submit to you the as like TV with us. So we fix Survivor, we gonna fix a whole bunch of stuff. And this is exactly like the civil rights movement. We fought for Black rights in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, right? When you fight for Black white rights, you fight for everybody's rights because everybody benefits, right? So if they treat us better, they're going to treat everybody else better. And I can tell you this, that season, season 14, and I'm looking at Dreams because this is where he is on my screen. Even when I talk about it now, I start crying. That was the, in my respectful opinion, the most racist season. That tribal council, and I cried when I watched it, and I didn't want to watch it, but I had to watch it because I had to remember who my enemy is in this human rights struggle. They were so disrespectful to Cassandra, Dreams, and Earl. It's the most vicious, vitriolic, racist tribal council ever in the history of Survivor because they had to pick a Black person to win. And the things that they did to them, I did not know this because I didn't know Cassandra or Dreams until we started this movement. When I talked to Dreams, the two Black men on Survivor who I respect the most are Dreams and Sean. And why is that? Because the narrative in Black America, since we got brought over here from Africa, is that Black men are trifling, they don't take care of their families, and they don't protect Black women. That is the narrative. Sean cut for V. The only reason I know that is because we talked as African-Americans. He cut for her. So she won because that Black man stood for that Black woman. And they never show that. I cut for Dreams. I love that man because after meeting him and talking to him, as Dream said before, the only reason he stayed on the show was to protect Cassandra because they were being racist to him from day one. And Dreams didn't say this. He said a lot, but he didn't say this. But I learned because we've had some conversations. But when they would make Cassandra do stuff like clean up like a maid, which is how they always caricature Black women, because Hattie McDaniel won an Oscar for her portrayal of a maid in Gone with the Wind way back when, and which, by the way, I think she was a Delta, but that's another story for another day. Dreams, I shout out to D9 because we about to do this. We about to get Kamala elected.
Yeah.
But I shout out to Dreams because when they were treating Cassandra like a step and fetch it Negro maid, Dreams called the white people out. They ain't show that on camera, right? And he said, well, if y'all gonna vote out, but at least tell the truth and shame the devil. Tell them that you voting out because she Black. And then when he called it, because the worst thing a racist wants to hear is that they racist. Then they did not get rid of Cassandra. And Yao Man, it's my understanding, he lied too, but they didn't show that. And he got carried, but they didn't show that. So I say that to say this. And even I'll talk about Philip and Michaela. Michaela's not on here.
Right, right.
Philip and Michaela actually were caricatured the first time they were on. And both of them thought, ooh, I've learned. So I want to go on a second time when they get invited so that I can try to fix the mischaracterization of me. And what they found out is this juggernaut that is Survivor, this juggernaut, you can't fix it even if you go back on with the knowledge.
Hey,
so I say that to say this. I'm about to be done, Sean. I swear my mom ain't lying. I say this. For real. I say this, that what we did on Juneteenth.
Yeah.
What we did, we sent that letter with conviction and with courage, and CBS had to respond. We're not going to go into detail, but we are currently talking to CBS about fixing the systemic racism, implicit bias, and microaggression on that show. So that moving forward, anybody who plays Survivor,
right,
if they have discomfort, because trust is uncomfortable. You ain't got no food or water and stuff, right? But the only discomfort we want for anybody to have is the gameplay, not because you black. Right. I'm done.
So real quick, just so, and thank you. Yeah, let's give, first of all, I love when you speak. You're so passionate.
Yeah.
But real quick, because I want everybody to speak, and I do want to say, Jolanda doesn't talk a lot about it, but she definitely represents our black LGBTQ community.
Oh, yeah, I'm gay. I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah, we know you out, girl. You ain't no closet. Yeah, ain't no closets near you. I just wanted to shout it out. Listen up. This is important because we as a collective, the history of black folks from James Baldwin, the Langston Hughes to, you know, Bayard Rustin, we've had the diaspora of black people. We're not monolithic from our sexualities to our political views. But the one thing that we do is our experiences are very similar because we're black. That doesn't mean that how we express ourselves and what we think is just when dreams gets pulled over, we all have a collective gasp because we know that experience either personally or through our family. I want to throw it to Philip and then Jeremy Crawford so we're not bouncing around. Because you mentioned Brother Philip, the specialist, one of the elders on here. And Philip, since that letter, you were definitely part of that original Black Survivor Alliance. You know, I'd like to hear your perspective on the moves that have been made, the progress, your take. And then after you, I want to go to Brother Jeremy Crawford, and then we'll keep it moving with some other topics.
Excellent, excellent. What I would like to do is just take a second. There's a book that you can't get. It's called The Black Aesthetic. The U.S. government put it out of print in 1971 when a guy named Addison Gale, an African-American professor, put it out. I just want to read one short paragraph from it because I think it's germane to what's happening in America today and, more importantly, what's happened to us specifically in relationship to parts of Survivor. And The Black Aesthetic is a book that teaches African-Americans and people of color from all over the world to develop something called an Afrocentric point of view. So if you go to my T Shepherd TV Twitter account, you'll notice I say I'm an autodidactic. Because of my Survivor experience, I made myself, if you will, relearn what I thought it was, A, to be an American, and more specifically, what it is to be Black in America. So indulge me, please. Afro-American is a contradiction. It is extremely difficult to achieve clarity when the very condition of your being is tied to a basic contradiction, because we have been in this place, America, and because unknown millions of us have been born and have lived and have died here over the course of the past 3.5 centuries. We have made an identity between ourselves and America, yet it remains the same nation that sponsored the rape of Africa, that is now and always been hostile to our presence here. The same that has exploited our labor and our minds and our culture, our nation, that only in a brief faltering moment has relented in a base attack on our very survival. Yet we still yield to such terms and names as Negro Americans, American Negroes, African Americans, Black Americans, etc. The concept of home and roots in America is the problem. People can only bring a nation out of mutual commitment to their common good. Here we have simply been victims. Our concept must be a world concept, and we must see ourselves, our roots, as African. And to that point, one of the things that was so difficult for me to understand, having served my country as a son of a father who served 23 years in the Marine Corps, as a brother to another brother who served honorably in the United States Army, and as an airborne soldier who taught me what it took to need to be so that I too could enter the Army and excel and receive some of the highest medals this country has to offer at times of peace when I serve. And then to take that and then become a federal agent with three separate federal agencies without a college degree, but just because of who I was, the integrity and the honesty and the trustworthiness that I presented, that they thought I was worthy to serve my country in that capacity. And then to be stopped on a pair of roller skates here in Santa Monica, California, loving my life, a senior county executive, making several hundred thousand dollars a year, supporting my son, supporting a family down in Trinidad, who was struggling mightily. They were in a third world nation, basically. And then to go on a show thinking that they would recognize me as a citizen of the country, someone who understood what it was to be a civic citizen. And then to go on the show and watch myself come home and not recognize what I'm witnessing on the television set. And then to be called crazy, delusional, polarizing. It was discussed earlier about what kind of impact that had on you during and post-survivor. Well, for me, it had such an impact that I saw their therapist for many years. And then subsequently saw my current psychologist, who told me that I needed to participate in this very process that I am with the Black Survivor Alliance. And I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity, because Yolanda reached out to me. And then I had an opportunity to meet all of you through this process and realize that what I was being told, that this feeling, this suffering, this hurt, this trauma was in my head. It's all in your head, Philip. But only then to be on that very first podcast we did and to hear each of your stories and hear you relate what the pain and the trauma and the hurt that you suffered and realize that this is what is meant by systemic. This is what is meant by systematic. This is what is meant by microaggressive.
Right.
To my very nature. And I must tell you, I was hurt. I was damaged. My whole sense of identity, that proud man that I always was known for with a square shoulder, slowly slumped. Yep. Shoulder slowly curved. And so when we had the meetings with CBS, which I will not go into because we've been asked not to, but I will say this, there was an apology offered. I won't go into the nature of the apology, but it showed me that there is a possibility for change and that they're willing to potentially do some things that before they had not been willing to do. Again, I won't go into the specifics.
Right.
But I will be like, as I once said of Jeff Probst in my final finale, which was, he was the piercing eagle soaring from above and then coming into the fray to ask a very poignant question. Well, I got news for Survivor. I, Philip William Shepherd, will spend my last days monitoring, watching everything that happens in America and more specifically with Survivor. At no time will I be interfered with. At no time will I be feared for my well-being. I am retired. I earned my retirement. Right. I've served my country. And now I'm going to serve my fellow and future contestants that will come on this show. I am optimistic, but at the end of the day, BSA, the Black Survivor Alliance.
Thank you, Philip. Appreciate that. No doubt. That was poignant.
Well, and guys, just
hold on, Philip.
There was one point I missed. This is it. Please.
Quick, man, because we're running low on time.
It's going to be very quick. It's going to be very quick. In all situations when a people have been wrong, there's been trauma, there's been hurt. There's only one group of people in 400 years that still wait for repair, still waiting for reparations.
Right.
And as far as I'm concerned, that needs to happen in every single level of this society.
And that
is watching.
On that point, Philip, what you said was 100%. That's why the talk of reparations is so prevalent now, because it's bubbling, it's time, and you do have to repair once there has been fault. But Jeremy, I want you to get in here and talk to us about, you know, your experience as a Black man, you know, living in America, who, you know, because I don't want this phone call. I mean, this phone call. I don't want this podcast to just be the traumatization that survivor causes, because we have some wonderful stories and some people on here who are doing some great things in the world. And I want to discuss some of these things that are going on in our society. We got our brother Jeremy on here, who's a first responder. I'd like to hear his perspective as a black man who's a first responder. And see, you know, it's a police officer and a fireman in one house, and they black. So I think I want to get that conversation going. But let's start with our brother Jeremy Crawford.
Did Clarence go at all? Because I don't think
no, he hasn't. I'll come to him in a second. But these are some new people I want to get in. So I got to see black. Go ahead, Jeremy.
I'll say some stuff about current events, but let me say this. Survivor has been on for 20 years, so, and editing has changed. So I definitely understand the editing of the early seasons, because I saw how horrible it was, and it just fed into so many stereotypes. And my issue in my season wasn't necessarily editing, but one thing that from season one to season probably 20, that the people of color and the black, and particularly the black contestants, experience is not having a voice after Survivor to express their grievances. The moment you're off the show, it is goodbye and good luck. There's no opportunity to combat the storyline that you've been given. And I think some of this, and for people listening for the first time, they might not understand that level of emotion about something that maybe happened so long, is because you've never had an opportunity to speak about it. And it's so few people who, one, understand it. And then you have to find people who watch the show, who watched your season, to really understand. So you're just walking around with all this anxiety about something that happened. And it's akin to a child who went through a traumatic experience and at 45 is just talking about it for the first time. And so when you hear it, you have to know that you are talking to somebody who is very fresh for that time period. For me, and I guess people in my season and season probably 25 and up, What I would put out to the world is, and what I think would make things better, is just non-segregated casting. When I did Survivor on season 37, I was in the black cast. So everybody that they was casting for the next three seasons, all the black people, pretty much people of color, were all in LA at the same time. When I got on my tribe, there were 10 people on my tribe. Five of them had been cast at the same time. So they had already spent a week in LA together. They had spent the 2 or 3 weeks that we were doing pre-taping. So these people already knew each other. They already had a level of familiarity. When I saw the people in my cast when we went to Ponderosa, I recognized all the minorities who had made it because they were all in my cast. And I don't know if that, because you only can speak to your own personal experience, but I don't know if that was a one-off situation, but it was something where B was in my casting. All of these people of color were in my casting, but you knew that they were not going to put three people from your casting on one tribe. So I already knew if it was four black people, it was going to be 2 and 2. So it started off where a group of five were already familiar. And familiarity is cash money in this game, as well as I would ask that the viewers and CBS also take a look at because everything is very, when you categorize something as racist, it's very difficult because it has to say that the person had racist intent when they started the initiative. Some things have racist effects. So even on my cast, 10 people on my tribe, two of us were black, but five came from Southern California. Five whites came from Southern California in the same area. Two of them worked in the same building. So where they're talking about avocado toast and In-N-Out Burger, and I've never been to In-N-Out Burger, that's a racist effect because, and you know it's a racist effect because if I said I'm putting five AKAs, five black people from Atlanta, five black people from HBCUs on a tribe, the entire world would say, well, they're all going to team together. They're all going to get together. And the show is just going to be about these black people voting everybody else. So I think part of, I think when we talk about race, understand that it is not up to us to prove the racist intent. It's the effect is enough. Mm. An effect should cause people to take pause. And it's not, and I'm not on here to make Survivor a better show. Survivor is fine. It's a good show. It's been on forever. I'm on here for the people who listen, and even if it's one or two people, to realize even if you don't have authority, you have influence. And that influence can be used for good, or it can be used for evil, or it can not be used at all. So when you go to these school board meetings and when you go and you see things going on in your community, use your influence. Even if you don't have authority, use your influence. I have never done a show about Survivor, so my experience has never been, nobody's ever asked one. So my experience, so that's the first thing, nobody's ever asked. And I hope CBS as well as the auxiliary organizations responsible, that would be Rob as a podcast, and other podcasts, because when we have these experiences and nobody asks us, then that is part of the silencing. What we're saying is that storyline that you never asked about is now the Bible. And so that person, and when you are listening to this podcast and you hear people speak about their experience and what they want to convey, what they're saying is, I've never had an opportunity to fight against the storylines. I've never had an opportunity to fight against it. And for me, people think that my storyline is about Natalie. And if you watch season 37, me and Natalie had a major conflict. I love the conflict that me and Natalie had because it's a conflict that African-Americans have all the time. We have it at work. We have it in the elevator. We have it at a restaurant. What is considered, you know, appropriate when we're amongst white people? For my editing, I was fine with it because it was a difficult situation. Me and Natalie were talking about things that black people never talk about in public. So it could have went really
Hey, Jeremy,
bad.
Could you real quick just touch what were some of the bullet point things that you guys were talking about? Because I'm sure we'll bring it up.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting because of the long, I was season 37. So all of the stereotypical things that CBS had did previously to black women were known to black characters. And so each year, everybody is fighting against that stereotype. And at one point, me and Natalie's conflict is that I was telling her, I know you told me you didn't want this label, but unfortunately, the things that you're doing and I'm here to witness does fall within this label. And if you don't want that label, you would have to kind of readjust. Whether she got that message, whether I had bad intentions, good intentions or nothing, it was the reality. So for me, it was portrayed properly. What wasn't portrayed, and because my life is so full, I don't care. When I got off Survivor, I was moving. I was traveling. I was in Thailand. I was in Brazil. I didn't really have time to just focus on this thing because I just didn't. You know, I told my cast, we had groups and we hashed it out in our groups, which the older generations probably didn't have because they didn't have WhatsApp. And we had these long WhatsApp battles. And I'm very much like, let's talk about it. Let's get it out. And everybody in my cast eventually said what they had to say. And, you know, that's all you can ask. But
so real quick, Jeremy, just real quick, because I'm keeping track of time. So guys, from here on out, if I got to jump in, don't take it personal because we're short on time. I'm looking. Rob and I have these clocks and we want to make sure we stay on topic. But I definitely want to make sure everyone is heard. So if I have to jump in, don't take it personal. I see because some of the newer folk. Go ahead, Rob.
And we can also, you know, we don't have to do it all tonight. That we can, you know, we can always come back and do more.
And that's the thing. We're gonna have a series of these, but I definitely want to make sure we get some of these topics in and just have folk say what they need to. Because for some people, this is the first time they've seen some of their favorite survivors, or even not so favorite, just, you know, folks that have, like you said, Jeremy, just once you are done, you just goodbye and good luck, and no one ever hear from you. So. I see, Joanna, as a woman of faith, how does that play into, us right now in what we're experiencing in our society, and how do we go back to faith as a way to kind of see our way through what we're going through? Joanna.
Hey, thank you, Sean, for taking my hand raised. The Sibia did it and said it all. It didn't, our faith didn't start with survivor. It shouldn't end with survivor. You understand what I'm saying? And it didn't begin with COVID-19. It shouldn't end with COVID-19. You really have to understand who you are and keep your position. But the reason I raised my hand is because you all have to choose where you're going to stand with your faith. Like, it has nothing to do with what I say faith is. Either you believe God or you don't. Either you're going to trust God or you're just going to believe in him like Santa Claus. But trusting him and handing your life over to him and actually believing that he is who he say he is, whether you're in the Amazon or whether you're in Atlanta, that's a personal thing that you have to choose. You're either going to continue to choose to, you have to continue to choose to believe him or be a part of the idea. Okay. And so my question actually is to Rob. It's his podcast. So first of all, Rob, thank you for having me on. I know you know who I am. I never met you in the Amazon, but you were a part of an all white male cast. Now Siri is going off. Okay.
Yeah.
She just all of a sudden start talking. I didn't even say anything. But Rob, what I wanted to ask you, because you and I were on the same show, I never had an opportunity to interact with you and your Caucasian tribe, but we did beat your socks off. And you know that I led a lot of those challenges in which we beat your socks off. I mean, that's obvious. We can go back and watch it.
Sure.
But I think you had a perspective of me. I didn't get an opportunity. I knew you were a huge Survivor fan. You kind of got in there by some last minute thing. But you are a white male, privileged male, who I think said some things. I can't remember what it was. This is almost 18 years ago. So I'm proud that you have continued to linger along in Survivor. It never meant a lot to me. Mm-hmm. I was who I am. I continue to be who I am. I've grown. And I said that on the show. It's not like I'm saying this on your podcast. I said it on the People Magazine. I said it on today's show. Yeah. God has been here for me, not these 16 people, not this show. But what I want to know is, since we're talking about this and you're sitting over here, unfortunately, you invited me and I was the only black person on your show. And I was a black female that you never got a chance to meet, mm-hmm. but you felt my hallelujah. You laughed at it and you mocked it with your eight ball. But let me ask you something. How did that work out for you, Rob? Well, how did your eight ball work out versus my hallelujah? You know, I'm the weird black girl, but you was getting beat by me with my mm-hmm. hallelujah.
Talk yeah, we definitely. Are you talking about that we definitely lost challenges? That
yeah, the entire time I was in the game, correct?
Yes.
And you had a rocket scientist and some other high profile guys, Caucasian men, correct?
That's right. We lost three
ladies
out of the
and gentlemen,
four challenges.
It just got real.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rob.
I'm just asking because I know y'all like, oh, black people, but. I went on there as the only black person and a black female, and I knew I was better than y'all when I showed up. I knew it. I looked around the room and I looked in your face, put Rob back up there. I looked in your faces and I realized that you had been through not what I've been through. I never came on to Survivor trying to be a part of what I knew would not accept me. I came to do what I did. And I said this before, if you go back and listen to anything I said, I came to do what I did and represent who I am. So I never stabbed anybody in the back. You guys voted me off. I don't know what you said. And I really want to hear, Rob, what your personal opinion
is. I just want to say that we were never in a tribe together that you got voted off. It was just the women that I wasn't even, we never even were on the same tribe together.
You're absolutely correct. Thank you for acknowledging that and bringing it out. But you were on the competing tribe that was getting beat by
me.
And you heard me saying hallelujah.
Certainly.
You knew we were praying and you had a commentary and an idea about the black woman. And what I want to know amongst these other black survivors is what was that commentary? What was that perspective? What did you think? What do you still think about me? Because I never had a chance to meet you, but you had a lot to say about me. I don't do a lot of research on Survivor. Yeah. I'm just asking you to be transparent because we need your opinion.
Certainly.
We need to know where did this come from?
That race was not something that was talked about. The only thing that I knew about you from when we were on the show was that you would often yell hallelujah in the challenge. And that was all that we knew. And that was all that people had commented on. That was it. We were on separate tribes that we never got to know you. And I'm happy.
How did it feel getting beat by us
and being
beat under my leadership?
It felt bad.
Okay. Because I do remember you saying something about me being religious, and I'm not mad about it. I'm glad that you can see me that way. I'm glad that because that has worked for me. God has continued to bless me. No lie. I'm not exaggerating or anything. But I do want to hear, you know, because I know you were on that all males tribe. And I just know like some of the things
losing.
That I heard you guys say. You were losing. And Roger, I have a clip of our show where Roger says, You guys are dogging Daniel. You remember? Mm-hmm. Daniel called you guys to lose that log tribe. And you guys are dogging Daniel. And you guys are like, how did we drop 5 out of 6 challenges to the women?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And do you remember what Roger, the atheist, said? Talk about faith, Sean.
What did he say?
He said the Lord is on their side.
Oh, wow.
He said the Lord is on their side. Now, Roger is an atheist. Oh. Roger never knew me. Roger, I never had any. That matter of fact, they made sure I was completely gone by the time the males and females interacted. It was all male, all against, all female. They did not even blend the tribes until I was completely voted off. But he said the Lord is on their side. So when you talk about faith, go ahead.
No, real quick, because I have some people that have to get off and put children down. And I want Rob to answer, to briefly respond. And there are some people that have to get off, and I want to keep this thing moving. Because you definitely, you know, Rob, she put it on your plate. So how do you want to respond?
Yeah.
And then I want to get some people that are about to bounce.
So, Joanna, I'm so happy that you're here. I feel like we've never gotten to talk, and you know that you guys definitely beat us real bad. That we were cocky, and there are many things that I'm wish I could take back that I said as a 24-year-old who was just excited to be on television. Like I said plenty of stupid things in a season of Men versus Women, and about how I was overconfident that the men were going to do well. So, add that to the list. We were way overconfident, and the women did an incredible job in that season, and a woman even won the season.
Wow.
Right. I was just talking about the faith component because I know that was a big mimic. I guess it's supposed to be a game or gimmick or something, but I guess God showed you guys that from Atlanta, a black single mother from an HBCU, you know, who wasn't a rocket scientist, mm-hmm. was smart enough to call on the name of the Lord. I caught fish before any of you guys. I set fire before you guys. The only reason we lost because the women start trying to implode with each other and didn't want to win that way. They were coming there with big fake breasts and trying to sleep with you guys. I thank you for your podcast.
I don't remember that part, but
yeah. So what this proves, once again, Joanna, we've all had trauma. And what happens, the reason I wanted you to get it in, and I know for people watching, some people may go, why are some people going in and being aggressive and bringing up old stuff? We've talked about the traumatic experience that some of us haven't had the experience or the opportunity. I didn't even know that you and Rob were on the same season. And when I reach out to folk, it's just, I get names, I call you. So I think this is actually a cool thing that you actually get to talk to someone from your season. Rob, it happens to be, you know, your platform, and you get to respond. Because
this is one of the greatest moments in the history of Rob as a podcast.
Joanna, you made history. So let's give Joanna another round. Definitely hallelujah with no jokes, because the same thing that you experienced, Joanna.
Joanna, let me also say that I'm sorry that it came across as mocking when I talked about how you were saying hallelujah. I really only got an impression of you as somebody who, you know, I never got the chance to know you, and I'm sure that must have hurt you. And so
I just want you to know it didn't, because I I use that as talking points. I use the clips of your sad face getting beat. I use it today, as a matter of fact, of your sad face and Roger's and all
if
the
you
white
want to
men's
see my sad face,
face
you should have seen Survivor All Stars.
No, literally. Like, I use it all the time to talk about my faith and how God gave me the mental, spiritual, physical prowess to beat the socks off of everybody to play Survivor, and you guys had to get rid of me. I'm not upset. I'm just intense in general. If you go to On the Move with Joanna Ward and watch my shows or watch me train, I'm intense in general. I have nothing against you, Roger. I mean, Rob, I've never met you or any of those men, but I do know that show, I have beat y'all butts off. It was the black girl who sang Hallelujah from the HBCU that beat your butt. And that's all I say. I've been saying that for 18 years. I don't care nothing about if I won. I don't care nothing about what they said. I beat your butt, and that's how
hey,
I
Joanna,
play.
Joanna, let me jump in on his. Clarence said with no Vaseline, you fill in the blanks. But Russ, you got the bounce. There's some people that gotta go. Hold on, y'all. Let's bring this back. I know our brother Russ, Ramona gotta go. Folks are putting kids down. Russ, any last parting words? And I want to get to my brother Jeremy. And I was hoping some of y'all can stay on here, but you can kind of listen to the part, you know, at the end because it is going to be recorded. Because I definitely want to jump into this situation that's happening now and as it relates to outside of Survivor. But Russ, I know you got to go. Any parting words? Ramona, I know you got to go. And then Jeremy, I'm going to bring it back to you because I want to talk about some of the things going on now. Go ahead, brother.
No, I just wanted to say thank you for, you know, having me, you know, brother Rob, sister Nino, you know, I thank you for allowing us to use your platform to discuss the past, to, you know, basically rip Band-Aids off of things that maybe we thought had healed and they have not. But now, you know, just like when you abrade skin, sometimes there's some pain that needs to be caused, but then you get real healing on the back end. But, you know, I'm glad that we finally, you know, have a voice where we can speak as a collective. So no one person is feeling like they're on an island, no pun intended, or suffering in silence, you know, and getting to, you know, air their grievances. But to on the front end, you know, all of the folks who were involved, you know, especially my sisters, my queens, you know, Jolanda and Jatia, who, you know, have decided that, you know, they're going to take, you know, this opportunity to make this particular system accountable to some folks. That's a beautiful thing. And I'm praying for, you know, both of them and all of the folks who are involved in, you know, moving this thing forward. So thank you. And you'll probably not hear from me again because me and Survivor, I did my thing. I'm done. But, you know, hey, I'm always available to come and kick it. So
two things. Hey, Russ, you are going to hear from me outside of this. And I want y'all to follow my brother Russ as he is a black man in an airplane taking us on a journey. You can go to his IG. And because we ain't got brothers in the air, you might need to lead the excursion out of this country. So folks going to be lining up at your airplane with baggage. So get ready, bro. All right. So I love you, man. Appreciate you. And right, I'm going to holler at you, man. Wakanda forever, man.
No doubt.
All right. Ramona, I know you got to go put little man's down. So I want to hear from you before you got to go. And then we're going to continue the convo.
I will just say it has been hilariously funny. I don't think I've laughed this much probably in the last week. So thank you for the comedic relief. It's been so interesting watching this journey from the year 2000 when I was on the first season to now, season 40, season 41 in a holding pattern. And while, yes, there has been improvement, we have recognized that there's such a long way to go. And I was also a part of the contingent with the Soul Survivor group and with the Black Survivor Alliance. We kind of we attacked from two different sides. And I believe that some good things are in the work. But like the specialist said, and actually CBS asked us to hold them to the carpet, and we will. We will do that. And for me, you know, I'm 20 years out of the game. Yes, I was voted out fourth. You know, the edit, like we've talked about the edit and the tropes and the lazy and sidekick. And yes, I've gotten over it too. I had my redemptive moment. I traveled to South Africa in 2019 and was able to play the game with some Survivor alums from the U.S. versus Survivor alums and fans from South Africa. And I kicked ass, y'all. I made it to the merge. I won an individual immunity. And so I was like, you know what? Because it really bothered me that I was edited as this lazy person. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. So I found my redemption. And so I'm good. But I'm glad to be a part of this movement to making Survivor a better show for Black people, people of color, marginalized people. And so I'm excited for the future. I'm a countdown. Three, I need everyone to get out and vote in November. If you're not registered to vote,
right,
please vote, especially minorities, Black people. Our lives literally depend on it. Please vote. That's three. Two, for those listening, I know Survivor is mostly, most of the fan base is middle America. And so I think Sean alluded to it earlier. A lot of the Black faces that a lot of these fans see are the only ones that are entered in their homes. And so that representation does matter. That edit does matter because it can turn into, you know, oh, all Black men are X or all Black women are Y. And so when those fans or people in general see a Black person, they're thinking that that's who Black people are. And so it matters. For people listening, we're human. We are human. I'd like if you get nothing else from this, we're not these characters. We have lives after this game. And so there have been traumas that we've experienced. And so for a lot of people to say, oh, you know, they're just, you need to get over it. I wish it was that easy. I really do. But sometimes it's not. And then one, I love you guys. I love you so much. And I can't wait till we have our family reunion when COVID is over and we can travel and we can put hands on each other and hug each other and, you know, express our love for each other. I just want to make it better. I want to make it better for my 9-year-old son because, okay, I said I wasn't going to do this. He's an athlete. You know, he's muscular. He's in jujitsu. He's also in ballet, but he's also a gymnast. And so by the time he's 16, he's probably going to be 6 feet tall, you know? And I don't want him to get, when he leaves the house, I want him to come back home to me. And so, yeah, the events that are happening right now are, they hit so close to home. You know, I've had conversations via Facebook with people who say, oh, just comply. Okay. So, but even when we comply, you can still get killed, you know? Yeah. So just try to be allies.
Yeah.
If you're not an African-American, you're not Black, a person of color, be an ally. Somebody said it before, use your voice in situations where, you know, the racist jokes, you know, get laughed at, call it out. Like, you know what? That's not really funny. Or what did you mean by that? Make people be accountable for their words.
Yes.
And you know, I don't want to, I know there are a lot of other people that want to speak. I'm actually going to put them to bed. And if you guys are still here,
yes,
I'm going to come back.
You better come back.
I promise.
Yes. So go ahead and put them down, because we're going to give you a virtual hug, because you was about to make us cry. Because you know it hits home when we start talking about our kids.
Put him to bed.
All right. I'm going to put him to bed
and then come on back. So two things. All right. Jeremy, I'm going to go to you, and then our brother Clarence. Clarence is one of our military men serving our country for years. I want to hear from y'all as brothers who are out here representing America on the front line, but also being black men. So, Jeremy, as a brother who's one survivor, but you also live in Boston, where we used to call Boston up south, because we know the racial history with Boston. Yeah. Give us your perspective with everything going on, with you and Val in the house being cops and firefighters, and having to see both sides. I'm really interested in that. And then I want our brother C Black to talk about it from the military perspective as a black man.
I don't want to take everybody's time, but I'm gonna try to go through this real quick.
Go through it.
Cause I'm in a unique spot. Like, my wife is a cop, and so I want everyone to know it's not about black people against cops, yo. Like, these people out here gotta realize that they keep changing the narrative on us, and we could still, there's good cops out there. You know what I mean? I will say this. One good thing that's coming about all this is that people are talking. And I go to work, and some of these people at work, they don't know my side, you know? Mm. And now we have conversations, and these are healthy conversations. And I tell them this, I say, my daughter is driving now, my oldest daughter. If my daughter goes out and leaves my house and doesn't come back home because a cop pulled her over or something happened, something bad happened to her, I tell her, I look everybody, all the firefighters in their face. I look at them all. I said, I'm going to go out there and I'm burning the place down. And if you're not right next to me, I'm burning your place down too.
Mm. That's deep.
And I'm Martin Luther King, you know what I'm saying? But I'll be Malcolm real fast. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I just want all them to realize that. Like, why does it have to come to this? You know what I'm saying? Right. It doesn't have to be this. It doesn't have to get this far. I don't want to go that route. But something needs to be done. So when they're all saying, why are they rioting? Why are they rioting? Because you're not listening. And I'm rioting too if it happens to my family. And you better be right with me. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So, like, it's a lot, man. This whole 2020 has been crazy. And Yolanda said it the best. Like, just go vote. We need to start with changing now. Like, it's tough out there right now. And it's stressful. Mm. And it just, you know, it sucks, man. It really sucks. And we need a change. And this dude up in the White House right now, he's just fanning the flames, and he's not doing a good job. And he's just like, let me get that. He's doing a great job at fanning the flame. You know what I mean? He's like,
right.
He's causing this separation between the country, and it's just, it's horrible. It's a lot.
First of all, I want to jump in, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but I want to hug you, man, because I feel your pain, because I have friends who are in the police force. And with everything going on, they have to navigate being officers who, you know, have to watch these videos and is painting this narrative of all cops. But they also are black men with families like you that are like, yo, I'm a father first before this badge. I'm a family man.
Yeah.
And you just expressed, listen, Martin Luther King said, riot is the language of the unheard. So it ain't like this country ain't used to riots. This country, the Boston Tea Party, speaking to you with your Boston accent, right? But the Boston Tea Party was based on a riot. So riot ain't never, you know, not a good answer. But I think you expressed the angst of what it is, what Du Bois talk about, the two-ness of being a black man in America. Are we Negro? Are we American? Those two warring souls always fighting doggedly against trying to figure out, are we American? Are we Negro? And we try our best. You saw Doc Rivers crying his heart out on TV, and what every Black American want for this country, who go to work every day, who pay their taxes, who work, who go, ain't I American? Langston Hughes said, I too am the darker brother. Like, I am the darker brother. Brother means I'm family. Am I not American yet? I fought in every war. I put my kids in school. I pay taxes. But you keep reminding me that I'm a Negro. And for some people, it is, I want to remind you, you a nigga. And what you just expressed was that dichotomy that many Black people who go to work, not just as officers, but who are teachers, who are every day who work in the MTA, who just are like trying to hold themselves together so they can get a paycheck, take care of their family, but they're holding in. And I'm glad you held your coworkers accountable to say, yo, if you ain't by me, you ain't part of the solution, then you part of the problem. So you expressed that, man. And I'm glad we're getting to hear from you, because I always wondered, you know, you have a unique position as a survivor winner, as I say, as our Obamas. You're a beloved brother from everybody. I think people in general really love you, and but you spoke and have always spoken so poignantly. So I'm really proud. I love you, brother. And I want to give our brother, Clarence Black, who has been serving our country for years. Same question for you, C. Black. You know, you my man, 50 grand. I love having you on here. I wasn't going to have this without you. But give us a real perspective, like our brother Jeremy just did, about being a Black man serving your country when at times your country isn't serving you.
You know, man, on my Instagram, and first off, thank you for having me, man. I love you. And Rob, too, man. Rob, I know you got to probably check your butt cheeks after what Joe did to you, man. So you need a minute. But check your ass cheeks, man. I'm worried. I'm worried.
I'll check.
You know, I know you didn't expect the first night at Shawshank on your own podcast, so it's gonna be all right. You got to clench, man. You got to clench the cheeks. So the first thing I'll say, Sean, is I have to be careful, because there are things that I can say as Clarence Black, and then there's things I can say as Major Black, and I'm honored to say I was recently promoted from captain to major, so I am an Army major now. So I'm happy for that. And so much of that is due to my lovely wife, who is wrapping up a 21-year career, who I credit with saving my life in so many ways, spiritually, militarily, just that partner. So I have to kind of toe that line of what I can say as Major Black. So I'll kind of keep it as, in full disclosure, as Clarence Black speaking about the military. We often say that when you are in uniform, it's one uniform and there's only one color, and that's green. But what these times have done for us across the entire DOD is it's forced us to take a hard look at the way that we do things. And, you know, effective a couple months ago, and the Marine Corps just made it effective, I believe, today, is that we no longer have your photo as a part of your promotions anymore. And it's because we want to eliminate even that view. So when you get promoted, people have your packet for promotion. And one of the things that traditionally people would see is your photo. And so what they want to do is they are now removing that to be able to say, like, you know what? The photo doesn't matter. So you won't know if Clarence Black is Black. You won't know if Clarence Black is white or Hispanic. You won't know. All you will see are my credentials. And so that tells me that we are going in a very serious direction of what we want the military to be. Numbers wise, it is still very much male and pale. But I will say that one of the largest group of enlistees right now that we have are Hispanic women, which is very interesting. You know, Hispanic women are joining our ranks in great numbers. So they are seeing the benefit of joining and serving. And, you know, when I look at the military, man, there are so many advantages, and I'm not trying to be a recruiter or any of that, but I will say that, you know, I'm a firm believer that if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And it is critical that people be a part of our military to try and change it. So, you know, when I see the numbers and I see who's joining and who's a part of it, you know, it definitely makes me feel good. And I can't see you, so I don't know if I lost Sean.
Yeah, Sean stepped away for a second. That he'll be right back. I really applaud you, Clarence, as somebody who serves our country. I know one of the things that Sean and I wanted to get to tonight was to talk about the topic of, you know, after George Floyd, there was such a movement that got started. Is there frustration that it felt like that there was so much movement, and then do you feel like that things sort of went, like, died down a little bit in terms of the momentum that came out of that, and then to have the Jacob Blake incident happen now, where that did the momentum get lost in the last couple of months?
This is Philip. If I could speak to that a little bit, but before I do, I would really congratulate Clarence on his promotion, having served as an enlisted
man myself.
And I did serve for a wonderful major, and I know the hard work that you guys have to put in to get those promotions. It's not easy to get them, and for you to get that, I applaud you, and I salute you. Thank you, sir, for serving our country.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Rob, I really think that the momentum hasn't really died. I think that what we're seeing is more divisiveness by the president of the United States, and they're giving him, because we're so close to the election, more airtime. But I actually think that the movement is more resilient. It's becoming more focused. You're reading, look at Vanity Fair's current issues that they're doing. They have a whole series of articles on Breonna Taylor. They just put one out today on President Trump's remarks about what happened in Wisconsin. There's been a lot of other more traditional rags now covering what's been happening, the systemic racism in this country and what's happening with that. So I don't really think it's dying. I just think that you're seeing right now the news cycle, because we're coming up on this election, is getting a little more airplay, but I actually think there's more focus, more determination. You heard what the coach of the Clippers, Doc Rivers, came and spoke his truth. You see Viola Davis. There's so many people stepping forward to keep the pressure on with what's happening. And I think we're not going to let this man destroy this country, And we're going to do what we have to do by any means necessary to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Can I say something? Go ahead, Jolanda. Go ahead.
Can I say this? So a bunch of thoughts came to my head. So first of all, power can seize nothing without demand, right? Mm-hmm. So if you look at the history of the world, there's never revolution without people making people have it, right? It's never peaceful, one. Two, my dad was a Marine. So I don't think it's a matter of joining the military, because when my dad came back, he was still, as some people said, a nigger. And my dad blew his brains out. Like, he was not the same man. And he thought that when he served his country in Vietnam, that he would be treated well. And so that definitely has affected me. To what Major Black said, I don't think they should use names either, because sometimes you can figure out stuff by last names or Clarence. If they should just use numbers in promotion, that's my opinion. But anyway, and it's not enough to be racist. You must be anti-racist, right? Yes. And it's not enough for Black people to speak about our pain, because some people have been raised and they're socialized to believe that we are innately inferior to them. So it is extremely important that our allies, so you can't try to be an ally, because trying is an excuse to fail. You must be an ally, right? So I'm going to call out a great ally, because yeah, Doc Rivers is Black, and there are still people saying, oh, he's pulling the race card, he's Black. But when Pete Carroll, the coach of the Seattle Seahawks, said that Black people, this is an extension of slavery, and white people need to listen to Black people because we know what it's like, and we need to stand with them. So that's what we need for you, Rob. So it's not enough for you to have us on here, because right now everybody got Black people. Black people getting high for stuff they never get high on. So the question is it knee-jerk, and do you really mean it? So you should probably have a podcast with a bunch of white folks and let them talk about how they feel, and then challenge them on their bullshit. Because there are times when people literally don't know they're being racist. And I'm telling you, I can't remember who said it, but you don't have to intentionally be racist. You can be racist and not even know it. because a white family let me live with them when I had to leave home after 11th grade. And I'm not getting into that. And they said nigger in their church. Right. I was too young to appreciate that. If you go to a church where you say nigger, y'all believe we niggas. Right. And then when we challenge people, because I think that Jeremy Collins said this, when somebody says some racist stuff, every single solitary time you see racism, you need to call that shit out. Right. And when they said, don't let them joke and say, oh, that's not, you know, funny. I can remember being in a car with one of my colleagues, a lawyer who's white, and somebody was driving across the lines. And he was like, damn, she was Asian, because everybody know Asians can't drive. And I remember thinking, first of all, I ain't never heard that before. But then I called him out and said, why would you say that? Everybody doesn't know Asians can't drive, because it's some white folks that can't drive. And so you have to say that. And so I can tell you that I wrote a whole post. I really don't care. White people are feeling real uncomfortable right now. I don't care. Because like Ramona, my son is now 28. I literally have not had a good night's sleep, a secure night's sleep, since my son was in middle school and he could stay out after dark. And my son ain't had no, I'm from the hood. And I live in the hood by choice. My son has never had a gun pulled on him by somebody in the hood. My son has had guns pulled on him by police all day, every day, black ones, white ones, and everything else. So I say that to say this. We need to make people feel uncomfortable, because as long as people are comfortable, they're not going to change, right? You can't tell who people are in easy times. You tell who they are in difficult times. And it's really interesting, as Jeremy that I didn't know before tonight, who was on season 37, how he talked about the conversation he had with whatever her name is. I suck with names. About how they had a conversation with black people that's normally not heard. Right. Every black person on here, when they have kids, if they haven't talked about it before, have the talk with their kids about what to do when they see the police, because they want them to come home alive. And white people, quite frankly, don't have that conversation. And then the last thing I'm going to say is this. I give Know Your Rights with the police trainings. I just had one on Sunday. Dreams listened. You can ask him what he thought about it. But I will say this. I'm sick of people saying, like Ramona said, comply. First of all, we get killed when we comply, right? And white people don't have to comply. You can literally shoot people with an AR-15 in front of people. People can tell the police, he shot them people. They can be running behind him, and the police will give him water, and then they will go and they will shoot an unarmed black man. So white people don't have to comply. In fact, white people can push police in the chest and yell at them. But when we are just black, walking on eggshells, because we all walk on eggshells whenever we see the police, we get killed. So complying is not the answer. And I think the standard should be, all we want for the police to do is treat us like they treat white people. I think if they treat us like they treat white people, we'll be fine. We ain't gonna be scared. We don't think the police protect and serve. We understand the police gonna give us, they gonna try to give us the benefit of the doubt if we're upset because we got stopped by the police and we ain't do something. So that's the standard. However the police treat white people, that's how they need to treat us. Because they can, white people can shoot up a whole church full of black folks and get taken to McDonald's and stuff. And we can just walk and exist black and we get killed.
So Jolanda, go ahead, Clarence.
I'm going to read something for you that'll sum, I think, everything that we're talking about comes from a sense of, we don't want special treatment. We want equitable treatment. We want to be treated fairly. So I'm going to read this shit. And it's funny because if you think about their biggest argument is about the looting and the violence and all this. So I'm going to read you something from 2003. This will blow your mind.
What is it that you're reading, Clarence? To tell us.
I'm reading. So I'm going to read you at the time, then Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, we overthrew Saddam Hussein. And as a result of overthrowing Saddam Hussein, there was massive rioting and looting in Iraq. And the Secretary of Defense, this is what the Secretary of Defense said. These are his words. Freedom is untidy, and free people are free to make mistakes and commit crimes and do bad things. They're also free to live their lives and do wonderful things. And that's what's happening. That's what's going to happen here. Looting, he added, was not uncommon for countries that experience significant social upheaval. Stuff happens, Rumsfeld said.
Facts.
He went on to say, very often, The pictures are pictures. The pictures are pictures of people going into symbols of the regime, into the palaces, into the boats, into the Ba'ath Party headquarters, and into the places that have been part of the repression, Rumsfeld said. And while no one condones looting, on the other hand, one can understand the pent-up feelings that may result from decades of repression and people who have had members of their family killed by that regime, for them to be taking their feelings out on that regime. That is the Secretary of Defense.
What year was that, Clarence?
Looting and rioting.
2003?
That is 2003.
We invaded Iraq.
I will send you the article. So, that is the Secretary of Defense talking about looting and rioting as almost an exhale of repressed people. But you don't see anybody quoting Donald's, we don't see conservatives, or you don't see people on that side of the issue quoting Donald Rumsfeld, because it's an inconvenient truth that when other people loot and riot, when it is convenient for them, they say, well, you know, them people, Saddam Hussein, well, that's okay for them.
Right.
But
right.
Oh, you all have no business looting and rioting. You're in America. It's this double standard that never ends. And that's what Clarence, wait a minute.
We're talking about black people. So.
Yeah. That double standard, though, is pretty consistent with America. And in the I'm going to go to you, Cassandra,
yes.
But I do want to say a couple of things. One thing that will help end this police brutality and harassment is to take away qualified immunity so that cops can't just with impunity do what they want and know that the law, like black people, are the only people, this outside immigrants, that have had laws on the books to stop progress. Like when people talk about immigrants and the black people are the only, I just want to let that sink in. We've had laws on these American books that have not only deemed us 3/5 human beings, but have been on the books to make sure that we have not thrived. So that's one. And the other thing, and I'm gonna go to you, Cassandra, and I'm gonna go back to your point, Jeremy, about holding those people accountable in your station. In the end, what Dr. King said, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. And so for those who consider themselves allies, like standing on the sidelines with your little shirts and all that, that's cool. But you really need people in the fight. And that's for all of us, because us getting together, we have our own biases and prejudices within our own. And I do think black people need a collective timeout so that we can regroup and figure out some things. But while we're presenting ourselves to the world, and I think while we have the world's ear, there are some tangible things that can be done. Obviously, voting is on that. But I also think local politics and doing some things for ourselves that can also be on there. Sandra, speaking of that, because I know you do some wonderful work here in L.A., can you come in on this conversation on what are some of the things that you think could help remedy some of these ills? And I know you're doing some wonderful things too, Sid.
Okay, I just want to start off by saying that Survivor introduced me at age 42 to racism. I skirted through life not ever, you know, being directly affected by racism. Third day in the game, you know, I had people telling me we're the Mexican Mafia plus one Asian. Your days here are numbered. For me, I had never dealt with that. It took dreams, a black man to stand up and really to give me courage to say, this is not right. And I'm here today because I do not want my nephews or my nieces to experience that like we're experiencing it right now. I fight so that my nephew and every other black kid has equal opportunities, that the doors are open. I pretty much live my life seeing fruits of other people, you know, off the backs of Martin Luther King. But Survivor really opened my eyes to truly what young people felt about black people in that day. And that was 14 years ago. So I stand here saying that it can work. I mean, it'll take, you know, all of us working together, because that season, three black people stuck together and we made it to the finish line. No, we didn't get the credit that we deserve. On the finale, Jeff had a showing of hands. If Yalman was in this final three, who would have voted for him? Everybody would have voted for him. We wouldn't have had a black alliance that actually made it through. I mean, you know, I give Dreams full credit because, you know, they even criticized me because I had designer shoes on, and other people out there had designer shoes on, but it was something about my shoes that troubled them. And the fact that I had a retirement plan, people said, you don't deserve the money. You don't need the money. You just rolled dreams coattail. And so, you know, but I agree. There was other people that was there that did less than I did. But the fact that he was able to call them out on day three, surely, or within the first 2 weeks, I was able to stay. We were able to win that game. And I think if we stay strong and united today, we can win. And we can make lives better for everyone else. So, you know, I challenge us as a group to get access to CBS. Yes, CBS is telling us this is what we're doing. We're hiring Blacks. We're hiring this. We have a mentor program. But why can't you consult with the Black Alliance or with these teams that we're working hard to develop to be a voice to you as to where to go to find the next producer, the next actress, the next actor? So I challenge, you know, CBS to utilize us fully, not just hear us one time and then come back and tell us these are the things that we're doing. Why couldn't we be a part of that discussion of who you're hiring, making sure they're representing who we are? And I just challenge us. I am a member of the Ladylike Foundation, and we do amazing things. We give scholarships. We're an association that we work year round to show kids, for me, what STEM is about, what opportunities are there for our kids in different non-traditional areas, science, technology, engineering. Those are areas that we feel that, you know, there's great opportunities, but they're not enough. African-American professors, they're asking me, how do we improve that? First, you have to have African-American professors before students of color want to come here. And second, you know, there is a base, but you're not reaching out to that base. We have HBCUs all across the South that can provide us what we need in all aspects, in all areas. And so, you know, my husband's a proud graduate of Morehouse College, UCLA. But, you know, I do miss that I didn't have that experience. But I think that we have to demand more. We have to demand access. And so we teach girls about, you know, untraditional careers. We talk to them on a monthly basis, giving them the platform and letting us know what are bothering them. I'm surprised at the number of our kids that are, you know, raised in houses that are, you know, their parents are on drugs. How do we help them get out of the system and to be productive people? We take them under our wing. We work with them on a daily basis. So, you know, that's why I'm here to, you know, really see not only do we, you know, go to them, but we be a part of them. And I'm hoping CBS and Survivor will embrace us as African Americans that have played the game and let us in. So let us be.
Two things, Cassandra. Thank you for that. And based on some of the initiatives, I hope that, you know, my Time Foundation here in L.A. and your program, we've talked off camera about our programs linking and working with the children here in South Central L.A. specifically. And hopefully some of those initiatives will not only help us, but other people who are doing some wonderful things. I know our brother Jeremy has to get off, so I want you to have some parting words as we continue. We probably got about maybe another 10, 15 minutes. So, Jeremy, I want you to, you know, give us some parting words.
And, yeah, I gotta run real quick. I just wanted to say thank you, guys. This is awesome. Like, this is really refreshing to hear everybody's stories. This is awesome. Real quick, my wife's the department. I just want everyone to know that the department, that's the old regime. I don't want like all these people around Foxborough running up to this Foxborough Police Department saying, "Oh, you did this to Val." Like, no, that was the old regime. They're gone. Like, it's all love now. It's cool now. Because there are allies. We have allies out there, and we need to embrace these allies. You know what I mean? We need to get as many allies and bring them close, because some people are pushing these allies away, and we this hate is strong, and we need to multiply this love as much as possible. I had this one guy on my fire department. He's an ally, and he said he's one of the guys that would let me know the new guys that come on that running their mouth saying the N-word and this and that. He would come to me and say, yo, he's smiling in your face, but yo, he talks a lot behind your back, you know? So he came to me and said, I'm gonna say something to the department about what's going on, and they're not doing enough for this for the minorities in this department. And I said, you do realize once you put it out there, you're not gonna be undercover anymore, you know? And he's like, I don't care. I need to say something. So he went out and said something, and he was shunned. Like, a lot of people, like, stopped talking to the guy. But I said to him, I said, and some minority said, he shouldn't have said that. He shouldn't have said that. Yo, I tell them all, like, yo, we need that. Like, I don't care if they don't know, if they know who he is now. He's fine with it. So we should be fine with it. Let's embrace him and let's go after this and conquer this thing. You know, so that's all. I just wanted to say thank you, guys. This was awesome.
Man.
Keep this thing rolling. This is beautiful. You, Sean, man. You're killing it, man. You're crushing this thing.
Brother. Nah, I love you, man. You know, this is long awaited, man. Like, you know, obviously on the next one, I definitely want to get our brother Wendell. I think getting all the black winners and all of us, you know, my brother Jervis, you know, we going to get him on because it's different dynamics. And I'm so happy I got to see your face and we got to do this. And I want the public to see us because we always hear the narrative. What about Chicago? Whenever you talk about racism, it's like Chicago is the de facto. If you don't want to talk about racism, well, what about black people in Chicago? One, I don't live there. And two, black on black is proximity crime. You know, it's white on white, it's Mexican on Mexican, Asian. So I love when we can change the narrative and show that when black people get together, although we're not monolithic, that there's an underlying of love. So I love you, brother. I'm glad you were on. Give Val our best. Y'all definitely the Obamas of this Survivor thing.
Get out of here.
And, I just wanted to say that. Rob, I did want to say this, and you guys feel free, which it's heavy. We know with Jacob Blake, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor. But I do want to give a shout out to those Americans who are white, Latino, Asian. Because not every segment of our society is as bad as we're making it. It's bad, trust me. But there are pockets of our society where there are folks. There are some down white folks who raised with black people. There are some Latinos. I grew up in New York with Puerto Rican, Dominicans, West Indians. And like, it ain't as bad as, you know, I don't want the people who have been allies, who are experiencing some of this, to feel like, yo, what about my contribution? You know, because when we talk all that, you know, we talk from our experiences and our passion and how we speak, sometimes it's misconstrued as a one size fit all. I definitely know for sure that there are people out there who, like to Jeremy's, are allies. They may not always be on the front lines. You may not see them posting anything, but they're the guy at work, like Jeremy, in your ear, like, yo, you need to watch that cat. They're the guy that may be shunned by his own or her own because they're like, nah, this ain't cool. And whether that's standing up for our LGBT brothers, whether that's standing up for immigrants and their rights, whether that's standing up for black folks, whether that's standing up for anybody, I just think acknowledging folk who do that. And that doesn't take away from the fervor of which we speak. But I definitely know I've been privy to some beautiful non-black people who are responsible for my success at times and some of the things. So I definitely know that the allies are out there. It's just with this guy in president and in the current political climate, it just seems like everything got ramped up a whole nother notch. And so police brutality, discrimination is seemingly becoming normalized. And so that's why we're speaking out so fervently against it. So I just wanted to put that out there. Welcome back, Ramon. I'm glad you came back. Dreams, good to see your face, brother. You finally got the car parked and the gas in the car. So Dreams.
Get your drink now, man. Get your drink.
Yeah, Clarence always got some kind of drink in his hand. So get one and toast to Clarence. Rob, you want to jump in on any of this?
A couple of the things that we had wanted to talk about tonight that this weekend, you know, on top of everything that's been going on in our country, on Friday, everybody was stunned to hear about Chadwick Boseman passing away this week, which is such a tragedy. And especially at this time when there's so much focus on his work, especially in 42. And Black Panther, and then the survivor community, especially this weekend, the loss of Cliff Robinson also was just another gut punch. Cliff Robinson, who got to play in Survivor, Kagyan, who, you know, from all accounts, the people that played with him just seemed like that he was somebody who, this is a guy who's an NBA star. He came to Survivor, you know, didn't act like he was above it in any way. That I got the one opportunity to talk to him also, that he easily could have said, like, look, I'm not doing the interviews for Survivor. I don't care about this. He went through the whole experience, and so just a person that is way too young, in his early 50s, to have lost him. So wanted to shout out Cliff Robinson tonight too.
So no doubt, and I'm glad you brought that up, because we did talk about bringing up Cliff Robinson, who is it's interesting. He was a trailblazer, literally.
Yeah.
In that he played for the Trailblazers, and for him to come over into the Survivor world, he's now part of our fraternity of survivors. May he and Chadwick Boseman rest in peace. The interesting thing about Chadwick, it definitely hit me and hit a lot of us in a way. The brother was only 42, 43 years old. But the blessing is that, particularly Black men, we have to get our health in order. We just talked about a lot of trauma that we go through. I mean, we being a Black man in this country is one of the most difficult things. And it's no taking away from nobody. I can only speak for myself. And one of the things we don't do is take care of health, because we just out here just surviving, just literally on the play of the word. And the death of Chadwick Boseman hopefully will bring more discussion on not only colon cancer, but our overall mental, physical, and definitely our spiritual health. It's not lost on me. There's a lot of irony in that. Jack Kirby, I believe his name, who created Black Panther, I believe his birthday was August 28th, the same day that Chadwick died. So I just think there's some irony in that the guy who invented it with Stan Lee on that same day. Was anyone else on here affected? I know most of us, with the passing of Chadwick.
Ramona? It cut especially deep for me. And I'd never met Chadwick before, but he's an alum of Howard University. So he's a son of my alma mater. And just the fact that, yeah, he was so young, you know, a lot, you know, I'm on social media a lot, and you see a lot of reports of, you know, like, oh my God, for the last 4 years, you know, he's been dying. But I like to look at it, cup is halfway full. Like, he was, yes, he knew he had cancer. His camp knew he had cancer. And I think it was amazing that none of that information was ever leaked out to the press or to the media, but he was living his life. And I think that's how we should all be, you know, not that we need a cancer diagnosis to say, okay, you know what? I don't know how long I have left, but I'm going to live every day with no regret. I think that should be the bar. Like, that should be the standard, so that there are no regrets, so that if tomorrow is your last day, you know that today I told everybody that I loved, that I loved them. I gave everybody that I wanted to hug, I hugged them. You know, there are no unspoken words, you know, no grudges held. Like, that should be the standard. So it really cut. You know, and we did Wakanda Forever, and I was like, oh my God, he was just a commencement speaker at Howard in 2018.
Right.
And you just would have never known.
Yeah. And I know, like, our own Vesepia is a 2-time cancer survivor.
Yes.
You know, yes, she's here. She is the ultimate survivor in my eyes.
If for real.
No one acknowledge it, we will. And I know our brother Philip was a COVID survivor. He was recently diagnosed and came and pulled through. So we're really happy about you being here, Philip. Is anyone else on here what are your thoughts on the health of Black people? Because trauma is one thing that affects, like, so much of your being, your physical, your mental, your spiritual. But then you then start talking about these things that are connected to our diet, things that are connected to, you know, some cultural things that we just passed, or that's just culture. What are some remedies that you guys, for our listeners, can put out there that we can do to take care of our health?
I would like to speak to that just a little bit, because it was talked about briefly in an article that People Magazine, as well as Cynthia Wang, did. Was the reporter who interviewed me about what I did. Because at the time that I was diagnosed with COVID-19, it was February towards the end of February 2020. And 62, the age limit when you would hear about an African-American male dying in New York City and other major metropolitan areas, his age was 62.5. And I am 62.9 now. I'm a few months away from my 63rd birthday. But when I went into my doctor, one of the things they knew about me, because I'd been going there for almost 15 years now at the UCLA Medical Clinic, was I don't drink, I don't smoke, and I am mostly vegetarian, but I do have fish and chicken once a week or twice a week. And I take a whole regimen of amino acids, essential minerals. I drink, coconut water every day. I have fruits, berries, and nuts throughout the day, a fresh salad mixed with different types of greens. And it's kind of a, in the beginning, it was boring for me to adapt that lifestyle. I rarely eat at an outside restaurant because they may put in butter and sugar and other things in these foods that are good just stuff. Not healthy for African Americans. And they tell you one of the reasons that we are, both our children as well as, grown adults are affected by COVID-19 is because of our diet, and it is because of our lifestyle choices that we're making. And for me, and I'm just going to be brief so someone else can jump in here, is that it's all about what you're putting in your mouth and making sure you're staying hydrated. That's a key point in making sure that you're grateful for what you have, right, and loving the people that are loving you, and try to avoid all the rest of the noise, right? Right. And it took me a long time to learn that. And so that's where I'm at. So,
thank you.
Can I say something to health?
Go ahead.
So I'm actually a strong proponent of mental and physical health for Black people because mental health is a taboo. And I will tell you, I went to a psychologist because your uncle started raping you when you 3 and he's 6'7". Your dad blows his brains out. Your mom tells you she wished she had aborted you. You got issues, right? And so we have to have strong minds, but we also have to have strong bodies. My grandmother, so in my family, we have a lot of high blood pressure, diabetes. You know, you look around in communities, now all these people on dialysis. Well, my grandmother had all those issues related to that, ended up having her leg under her knee amputated. And she died 36 hours after that. But I can remember, because I'm a former world-class athlete, right? I ran track for the United States and won a bunch of national championships. I just remember as an athlete, we always were taught to eat, more healthy, right? And I was raised with my mom. She was raised in African culture. My mother went to an HBCU, Texas Southern University in Houston. So we always had access to fresh fruits and vegetables. I can tell you right here, right now, with Black people, that's difficult because that's mostly where the food deserts are, where they have, they have convenience stores. And it's hard for people in historically Black and brown communities to have access to fresh food and fresh fruits and vegetables. But I can tell you, I don't eat creams. My girlfriend is a personal trainer. She'll tell you, stay away from stuff that's white, like white rice. If you're going to eat, I don't mean white like people, because I saw some looks on some people's faces. But like white rice, white bread, don't, stay away from that because it tends to go in places you don't want it. If you're fat through the middle section, it's where your heart and your important organs are. So people like that are more likely to have heart attacks and have issues like that. Drink a lot of water. I'm drinking flavored water, right? Because I don't like the way water tastes, so I get this little cheap stuff from HEB. So you've seen me drink water because I'm trying to stay hydrated, right? That's important. I don't eat a lot of fried foods. I made fried foods maybe 4 times a year. Cook a lot at home because all that stuff they put in foods are just bad. So what Black folks need to do, just because we're not did not always have access to healthy foods as slaves, and all that stuff sort of goes down because there's a whole nother story about where chitlins come from, but that's another story for another day. That Black people we need to talk more about heart health, and we need to stay active. So you can eat well, but if you lay around, you're not going to do stuff. So you need to keep moving. So, I even put on Facebook today when I was working out because I'm trying to be fine like my son's 25-year-old girlfriend, right? Even though I'm about to be 55, I don't need to look like I'm 55.
You look good.
Can say is this.
You look fabulous, darling.
I didn't wake up like this. I wasn't born like this. I worked very, very, very hard to stay fit because all I can remember is my grandmother before she died, her health was so bad because of just the eating habits. And she was the best cook I know, right? But very fattening. the last 2 or 3 years of her life, she wanted to die because she was not living. She was existing. Right. And all I remember saying is, when I get older, I don't want to exist. I want to live. Right. And so I want to be it. So when I can get up and do stuff, I get up and do it, because some people can't get up and do stuff and they wish they would. So there are things that we take for granted. And just as Black people, we need to move. We need to eat better. We need to drink water. Right. We need to support that.
So real quick, guys, we're going to be wrapping up pretty soon. I do want to say that this is going to be an ongoing series. We have we're going to be bringing back some older contestants, some newer ones. I do want to kind of surmise some things that we've discussed and for the fans to know. We've collectively met with CBS on several occasions. Jeff Probst was present. Kelly Call, the president. I want to shout out Tiffany Smith, who's in charge of diversity over there. And Della Colley. What's her name? Lori Della Colley, yeah. These are just some names who have been very instrumental behind the scenes with the Black Survivor Alliance, as well as the Soul Survivors. I know our brother Earl has been on some of those conversations. And we are collectively moving the needle forward. I just want people to know, you know, it was 400 years to get us here. None of this is going to change overnight, but we are trying our best to make incremental change. I think this COVID downtime, this quarantine, was a blessing for our country to stop and assess a lot of things that were wrong, because we were just moving and moving and moving without really stopping. And I think we were able for us to not have to go on to another Survivor season was a blessing, because by us having to stop, there were some issues in season 39 that were dealt with. Obviously, these things came to the forefront. So
in terms of Survivor, it was good that there was a pause.
Yeah, the pause definitely was good. But for the nation, not just Survivor, the nation needed a pause so that we can kind of stop. And I'm not saying people not working, but in terms of just moving on without acknowledging what's going on. So as we move this series.
Hey, Sean.
What happened, Clarence?
Hey, let me ask the next time you guys meet with. So one of my biggest things, man, is because I've always kind of kept it moving after my season. But the thing my only gripe with Survivor, man, has always been, if I could sit in a room with Jeff, I would just say, man, like, the only thing that has ever really, like, bothered the shit out of me, and they did it to V, was to try and get them to understand, like, man, if y'all can control who is a fan favorite. Like, if you let somebody play this game 3, 4, 5 times, they're going to be a fan favorite. Like, they have to distribute them opportunities out with some kind of, like, you know, equality, man. Otherwise, if you got people that have played this game, think of most of the Black players have played this game once, whereas you got some people, and it didn't matter when they got voted off in their season, they just kept bringing them back, like, oh, well, he's a character. Oh, well, she is this.
Right.
And it's like you lump us into this same basket where we don't get to play again. So that's my biggest thing to them would be, man, like, you know, Jeff gets to sit there and kind of just decide and pull strings. Oh, this person is a fan. Like, we talked about the shit with Hunter, right? They put Hunter out there as a military pilot. At the time, he wasn't.
Right.
But it's just this idea that man, if you all get to control who I'm so thankful for social media in this aspect, man. I converse with so many fans on social media after years of not wanting to, but I converse with so many fans, and I'm thankful to Rob and his partner, man, Rob and Akiva have a podcast. I get so much response from people who are like, I never knew you. Like, I'm meeting you for the first time, or you aren't the person I saw on the show. I'm so glad I got to connect with you over social media. Man, I would love to see you play again. And that's the stuff that makes me feel good. So when you talk to them and you talk to Probst, man, when you talk to this little ass, like, man, just tell him, like, dude, if you're going to sit here and dole out who get to be a fan favorite, this shit ain't never going to be right. Yeah. Like, somebody let the fans vote who they want to have on. So Jeff not sitting there pulling strings and shit.
No, Clarence. So Clarence, we did bring it up. Clarence, we did bring it. All of that was addressed. And trust me, Jeff was on the hot seat like he's never been. I ain't going to get into details. And it was expressed with a lot of emotion and passion, as it should have. Look, brother, I did a thing about 20 years ago. I've never had an opportunity to come back and try to win $1 million for my family. Man. I've never had the opportunity to come back and avenge what I thought maybe a season that I could have won. Vesepia as a winner has just been for you got new people playing that don't even know she exists. And definitely that falls on Jeff's lap. Right. And here's the interesting thing. Now that we're making change, it's all good. But I also know, and I've expressed this, is that sometimes when people have to change, they all of a sudden act like they got to change your heart. It's like in 20 years didn't go by and you did not see everything we talking about. This was by design. It was by choice. I just think when people are forced to do what they never had to, all of a sudden it becomes like this epiphany that they supposed to get credit for. So, brother, trust me, it was brought up. And it was definitely brought up.
Jeff out here controlling purse strings, man. Like, I see Hunter doing tack light. That's a paycheck.
Yeah.
I see Rupert doing that's a paycheck.
It is.
So it's not just like it's almost like Jeff is getting to decide who he wants to put the Survivor seal of approval on. Man, Hatch went to jail, and yet they still will put that, they will still will put him in positions to get that paycheck. Like,
yes.
That yeah. It's that power. And we see that, man. We see like yeah. You telling me Hunter get to do tack light, but you can't put V on again. I'm like, bro, that's yeah. So obviously some bullshit. I can't even, like, my mind is blown.
Nah, to your point, brother, and I don't want to...
That tack light so
we did.
Horrible.
It was, and you bought it, huh? He got your $20? You bought that tack light?
Yes.
But look, in all seriousness, your point is valid, brother. It was brought up. That's why the CBS will be rolling out and putting out a press release on a lot of the changes so that the public can also hold them accountable. And there are some tangibles on the table. There are many of us that are in constant conversations with them. And so moving forward, we definitely want to wrap this up. First of all, I want to thank my brother Rob for always being open. Like anytime I call or text, he's just ready. And he's so cool with doing this. And this is one of the few opportunities because there have been people who have asked me, where you at, Sean? Where you been? Where? And like many people, I've stepped away because of the trauma, because of the wages lost, because of the things I couldn't talk about. And like Clarence said, with social media and these kind of platforms, we get to control the narrative and not wait for CBS and that big machine that they have over there. So I'm just grateful for this platform. I'm grateful for the Black survivors and the non-Black survivors who get it. I'm grateful for the for those of you who choose to come on. And as unpredictable as it can be, I think we're on to something. I think it's a blessing for the fans to get to know those who were voted out early or just forgotten, and even those who are fan favorites. So with that said, Rob, any last words before we tie this thing in a bow and until the next one?
No, this was great tonight. Again, Sean, thank you for putting it all together. Thanks to everybody that was on the panel. And Joanna, I'm so happy that we got to catch up.
Into my personal cell phone number. I want to get to know you personally, and I want you to get
FaceTime.
I sent you my personal cell phone number.
Okay, all right.
And I expect Rob, you better get from
Ebony and Ivory.
But can we talk about other things besides how bad I got beat on Survivor?
Harmony.
Rob, clench your ass cheeks.
That's what I just said. That's why I wanted to give you my phone.
Oh, you want to talk about more stuff? Okay.
Yeah. More bigger things are going on.
Okay,
but
great.
I appreciate you having me on because I know you were like, oh my God.
Yeah, you didn't expect that.
I appreciate your bravery.
Thank you. Thank you.
Get that girl a car.
Thanks, everybody. I really enjoyed it. Rob,
that, no
I
doubt.
Want to say thanks again.
So we're going to tie this up. I want to thank the fans for tuning in and Rob. And just in a quick 20 seconds, I want to start with everyone to let us know what's your handle? Where can people find you? Do you have something to plug? Please use 20 to 30 seconds so that we can get everybody in. Joanna, I want to start with you. Let us know where we can find you and what things you're working on.
Minister, Master Trainer, Faith and Fitness, JoannaWardFitness.com or Google On The Move with Joanna Ward. It's about nutrition and melanated people taking care of themselves mentally, spiritually, and physically.
Damn. Thank you. Jolanda, other than out here in these Houston and American streets fighting that good fight, where can we find you? Where can folk get in touch and know what you're doing? You're on mute, girl. We can't hear you.
So I got a made up black name, Jolanda, like Yolanda with a J, J-O-L-A-N-D-A Jones. figure that out. I have a book, Owning My Shit, stands for Suffering Hardship, Internalizing Trauma. I give free, I'm sort of charged now. Know Your Rights with the police trainings. Yeah, you're right. I've been doing it since 1999. Her Dreams participated in one this week. I just fight the good fight. I'm a lawyer, so if the police mess with you, I can mess with them. Again, Jolanda Jones, I'm easy to find on social media.
No doubt. Thank you. Clarence, tell us where we can find you and what you got going on, bro.
Yeah, man, you can find me. I'm at hashtag save ass cheeks. And then also at Jolanda got up in him. So, you know, y'all can find me there. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, I'm all over social media.
No doubt.
What? You know, Clarence J. Black. I'm everywhere. I'm everywhere.
Okay. Thank you. My brother, Philip, the specialist. I know you have a book, so let us know what you got, bro.
Okay. So right now, my current book out is The Legend of Things Past. You can get it on Amazon, but I'm happy to announce tonight. I just got the cover for my new book coming out. It'll be hitting around the first week of December. It's called The Russian Job. And so, you know, that's all I'm going to say about it. I'm not going to plug it shamelessly much more than that. I also want to tell you guys there's something coming up that I've just in the process of connecting a producer with CBS for a reality award show that is actually televised. And they'll be getting some information on that in probably tomorrow or the next couple of days. But it's put on by a major producer here in town. And it's going to be like on par with like the Academy Awards. I've seen the whole entire presentation. I'm really, really excited about, you know, making that connection with that individual. So expect to see some of you guys there. And also my handle is Peace Shepherd TV on Twitter and Philip the Specialist on Instagram. And anytime you guys need me to support you in anything you're doing, hit me up. I'd be more than happy to share the content.
You know how I know you the man, Philip, because you just got pussy all around you. Just all your pussycat.
There's a cat. Yeah, the cat. The pussycat.
All around you. That's how you the man. Yes, Dreams. Yeah, Ramona, don't close your eyes. My brother Dreams, tell us where we can find you and what you're doing, bro, with that MMA. And I know you was boxing back. So tell us where we can find and what you're doing, bro.
Yeah, man. Usually on Facebook or Instagram, people still hit me up from Survivor stuff. It's weird, really, after 14 years. But usually Dre Hurd Instagram or Dre Hurd on Facebook. And right now I'm just training kids, training some adults to go pro in their career, trying to guide people usually to get to the next level of MMA so they can all make it to the UFC, you know, because that's where you get the money at. Mm-hmm.
All right. Appreciate you, brother, man. Keep it up. And definitely I'm going to connect with you when we get off. I got some things I want us to work on by coastal. So I love you, brother. Right. Thank you. No doubt.
You too, bro.
No doubt. Ramona, what you got going on, sis?
I am living my life, trying to be the best mom that I can be, trying to make better decisions every day so that my 9-year-old is proud of his mom. Mm-hmm. Ramona Gray Amaro on Facebook. But other than that, you know, I've kind of, you know, shied away from the spotlight, and I'm just happy to be a mom and working from home since March, and probably will be doing so through the end of this year, and have turned into a fourth grade teacher since school is 100% virtual. So
yeah,
I'm doing double duty, but loving every minute of it. Loving every minute of it.
No doubt. Thank you. And it's like, Ramona, you and many parents are now understanding what teachers across America deal with now that you're home with your own kids. Listen. Not necessarily because they bad, but because you're like, I know some people. What, Rob, what did you say? You said, man, I take my chances.
Don't repeat
with COVID.
What I said. Yeah.
Okay. All right. You're right. It was a joke, but I thought it was funny.
My wife might be watching this. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't want you to get in trouble at home.
They deserve a raise.
No doubt. You say that for the people in the back.
Right.
Cassandra, let us know what you're doing, sis, where we can find you and what you got going on.
Okay, so you can find me on Facebook and Instagram. I'm looking forward to retiring from the university in another year and a half. And my goal is to get more involved in community-based activities to clean up L.A., our city. It's looking pretty bad right now. So that's what I'm doing. And I have to admit, it was a hard act to follow all of you amazing people.
No doubt. No, but we all stand on our own, but we're a collective and we have each other's back.
I'm on Facebook, Sean Allen Rector. I actually had to put my whole name because a fan took my name and was posing as me with a Survivor picture. Like, I wasn't even on social media. And people was like, man, I was like, I ain't on social media. And I looked, and it was a picture of me. So I had to take my name. So I'm on that. Our company website is www.thetimefoundation.org. T-Y-M-E stands for Teaching Young Men Excellence. We have we started a new program called African American Academy in high schools, where we're catering to the needs of Black students mentally, spiritually, physically, holistically. I'm still an actor. I would love to get back on stage. It's been a while, but I'm an artist at heart. I'm a father. I'm a partner. I'm a son. I'm a grandson. And shout out to my family. Shout out to all my students. Shout out to everyone that's made me who I am. I appreciate the opportunity. Someone said it earlier. I think it was you, Ramona, that with the passing of Chadwick Boseman, let's not take life for granted. Tomorrow's not promised. All of us have an expiration date. We do not know the time, the hour, nor the day. Hug your loved ones. Minimize the arguments. So many things are just so not worth it. And that I'm telling that to myself, because this on these streets out here in L.A., it's rough. You got to deal with so much and people. And I'm modeling things for so many people who look up to me. But I also know just these times are tough. And so if you can take a moment to laugh, to smile, to make someone's day better, man, you don't know how many lives you might be saving considering what's going on. So let's make sure we don't take life for granted. I hope we see y'all on the next one. And Rob, you the man. So you get to end this joint. We'll talk at some point afterwards. But what's your last words, bro?
Well, I want to thank you all again for participating in this. That I've been reading all the comments in the chat. Everybody appreciates that you all took time out to have these important conversations right now. So thank you all again for being a part of this. And then, Sean, again, thank you for putting this all together.
No doubt, man. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Rob. Listen, hey, seriously, man. Rob, listen.
Yes, Clarence.
How's your booty hole, man? Okay. You okay?
Yeah.
How's your butt?
On that note, I think it's only fitting. In honor of our brother Wakanda Forever, love you.
Yes.
We'll definitely link up.
Love you, Rob.
Thank you.
Love you, Rob.
Love you.
Collective hug, Rob.
Yes.
Group hug.
Yeah.
Group hug.
Yeah, where's Joanna? Come back, Joanna.
Clarence, say it. I'll put you behind all, but Rob, it was all love. I love you, man.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thanks, Sean. Thank you, guys. Love you guys. Have a good night.
Always, y'all.